Well, Sheriff Valerio, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
You bet. Thank you.
So first of all, you wrote a position paper about your own personal feelings toward the gun laws that have come out of the state legislature. Can you touch on those? I know that, you know, there's more than one law, but can you touch on a couple of your personal feelings?
Yeah, the paper I wrote, it's a part of a kind of an op-ed piece that we call Just the Facts, where occasionally we'll voice my opinion on certain things that go on in the county or in the state or in the country. And this one dealt with these two particular laws that were passed in Colorado. My position is the Second Amendment says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And so any laws that sort of blanket all the general public, law-abiding citizens, and interfere, infringe, or whatever, I'm opposed to. So the position paper really starts with that position and says, you know, the term shall not be infringed is pretty absolute in my opinion. And these laws that are being passed are infringing on me as a law-abiding citizen, you as a law-abiding citizen, to freely own guns according to the, to our Constitution. A couple of the other topics on that were I don't believe such issues like background checks are going to weed out dangerous people, because evil people are evil people. They're not going to abide by the law. They're going to find weapons of some sort to do what it is that they want to do. One of the examples I laid out was, you know, we've had some rather serious, or excuse me, famous serial killers in our country, and none of which use guns as their source of evil. So we're not really focusing on the problem. We're trying to fix it by, you know, going after the tools rather than go after the people that commit crimes.
And you mentioned the universal background checks. Can you talk a little bit about why you take issue with the magazine limit?
Okay, the magazine limit. You know, there's two laws that we're focusing on. One is, of course, the background check law, and the other one is the limited magazine capacity. The first thing I have with the magazine capacity is there's no empirical data to come up with a number of 15 rounds or less. Why not 14? Why not 16? Why not 13? Why not 17? It was like a dart they threw at the board and said, let's do 15. And if that's a point, then again, I'm going to say there's no value in that. You know, when we set speed limits on roads, we look at conditions and you know, deaths and things, and we come up with criteria to say this is safe on this road. There's no criteria for this. The second thing is, quite frankly, it's none of the government's business. If I want to own a gun with 12 rounds, I should be able to own a gun with 12 rounds. If I'm a law-abiding citizen, I am titled under the Constitution to own a gun or several guns if I choose. And whether it has a 15-round magazine or a 16 or a 20 or a 30 really is, frankly, none of the government's business. It's my personal property, and I have a right to do with it what I want, as long as I am a law-abiding citizen. If I use it for illegal means, whether it's a gun or a motor vehicle or something else, then I should be dealt with as a criminal, and not focus on the tools I use to commit that crime. So that's my first issue, is with the magazine limitation. The background check system, again, what it does is it's very overreaching, so that every law-abiding citizen is now subject to becoming a criminal merely because they're not doing what this law wants. And in it, it discusses a lot of transferring of firearms. So if I wanted to sell you a gun, I would first have to go find a licensed firearms dealer. He would have to agree for a $10 fee to do a background check on both of us. We would have to do the transfer, et cetera. My question is, why? I'm law-abiding, you're law-abiding, I should be able to sell you my gun just like I could sell you my fishing rod. And to do such an overbearing, in my opinion, law on the general law-abiding citizens, to me, is no different than going out here on the highway and putting up a roadblock and contacting every driver and searching every car because we might find somebody that's committing a violation. And that's against the Fourth Amendment in the Constitution, because the Fourth Amendment says, in order for me to infringe on your rights, on your freedoms, I have to have probable cause that you're committing or about to commit a crime. So to just do this blanket, everybody has to comply with this or else now what would normally be a law-abiding citizen is a criminal, is not what our Constitution is about.
You know, and of course the argument from more gun regulations, you know, people who support that, is that on the magazine limit, you know, some of the perpetrators who committed these heinous crimes, like the movie theater shooting in Aurora, had these big magazines. Do you feel as if these kinds of mass killings would at all be curbed if such a law was enforced?
No, I don't, for several reasons. One is, particularly in the Aurora Theater shooting, and I'm getting this from what I believe in the news reports. I haven't really been briefed on it in detail, but he had three different types of weapons. He had a semi-automatic handgun. He had a, I believe it was an AR-15 or something, and he also had a shotgun. And when the one jammed and failed, he just went to the other weapon. So once again, what's the difference whether he had one magazine with X number of bullets or three different guns, you know, three different types of guns? So he came prepared. The bottom line is, why are we spending so much energy focusing on the guns he had rather than going after him and treating him like the criminal that he is? And then you take that further and we look at people's backgrounds and say, why are we letting violent offenders in and out of jail, in and out of jail, in and out of prison, when we should be focusing on their behaviors, not the tools they use to commit their crimes? And we're looking at this wrong. A friend of mine said something in an analogy like this. We know we have 30,000 or so people a year that die in car crashes every year, yet we're not focusing on regulating the horsepower of vehicles. We're focusing on dealing with bad drivers. And in this case, it's the same thing. Let's go after the people that are using guns illegally. Let's go after the people that should not be possessing guns because they've been deemed to be convicted felons or whatever, and leave the law-abiding citizens alone.
And I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves, but you know, as it currently stands, without these two laws in place, you know, the status quo right now, is it okay or do we need more regulations?
You know, I think it's okay. I mean, understand that we do have gun regulation in this country. There's a line drawn in the sand, so to speak, where you can't have a fully automatic machine gun. You can't walk around with a bazooka. You can't have hand grenades. You can't have military armament. You can through a special licensing process, but the average person can't buy these in a sporting goods store, can't buy these in a gun shop, nor can they run around in public with them. We're talking about guns that are commonly used, commonly sold for various reasons, whether it's self-defense or shooting sports or hunting. And the line in the sand is everybody's comfortable with that. There isn't anybody in law enforcement that's saying, no, let's allow, you know, automatic machine guns or let's allow people to carry military armament. So the regulation exists. All I'm saying is I'm not willing to move that line. I'm comfortable where that line is. And by moving that line, now we're encroaching on citizens of the United States that are protected under the Second Amendment and their right to keep and bear arms.
So you are involved in a lawsuit with 54 other sheriffs in Colorado. What do the plaintiffs involved in that lawsuit hope comes out of it?
Well, what we hope is that the laws are eventually struck down as being unconstitutional. There's several different approaches that the lawsuit's taking that I'm really not in the legal expert opinion to discuss, but essentially it's a violation of the Second Amendment, right to keep and bear arms. There's some issues with the 14th Amendment and how the laws are written and the vagueness and the lack of being able to readily understand them. There's in the lawsuit, we have some ADA plaintiffs, disabled plaintiffs, and there's some language about violating the American Disabilities Act. And we have, I would add that it's not just 55 sheriffs. We have the Colorado Farm Bureau is a plaintiff that's representing farmers and ranchers and rural folks. And there's an organization, I believe it's Women for Concealed Carry. So there are numerous plaintiffs in this just beyond the sheriffs. But the sheriffs, 55 of us, have said, this isn't right. You know, we're elected by the people, so we somewhat represent the people. And our response is, this is not right. This is not set well. We're trying to move that line that I just discussed earlier, and we're not willing to do that. We think these laws infringe on our constitutional rights, infringe on our freedoms, infringe on us as law-abiding citizens. And we want it not only for myself, because I'm a citizen of this state and this country as well, but we have some obligation to represent the people that have elected us.
Well, sure. And do you think that by entering into this lawsuit, you are representing the people of Garfield County? And if so, how do you know?
You know, I think so. Garfield County, and at least the feedback I get, and the feedback I've been getting since this topic has become an issue, even while they were debating these laws, has overwhelmingly been supportive. In fact, there's been very little negative. You know, there have been people, there's been some letters to the editor, of course, you know, they would prefer these gun laws, and there's been people that have been personally affected either themselves or their family by gun violence, and then I understand the emotion behind it. But for the most part, it's been very, very positive and very, very supportive. And I think I would be able to gauge in my career, I've waded into things where it's pretty clear that, you know, maybe the community isn't as supportive. But right now, I think I'm very comfortable to say that Garfield County generally is supportive of this. The other thing I would say is this is not partisan in terms of political. You know, 55 sheriffs, 7 of them are Democrats as well as Republicans. I can tell you personally, I've had folks that I've known in this community for years that we pretty much agree to disagree on our opposite sides of the political spectrum, but yet they've called me and said, "We appreciate what you're doing." You know, so it's not so much a political thing at all. It's in our opinion, a right and a wrong. It's the focusing on the wrong thing when we should be focusing on the criminal rather than focusing on the tool.
And from a law enforcement perspective, how will these laws affect the county? I mean, I know that you're planning to not enforce them, correct?
Well, the way the laws currently are written right now is I can't enforce them because they're confusing. Laws are supposed to be very well-written, simple, and easy to understand. And if the people in law enforcement can't understand them, certainly we wouldn't expect the general citizen to understand them. And so that's the first problem. So it's not a matter of I'm just refusing to enforce them. Currently, the way they are, we don't know what it means. The example being in the magazine limit capacity is they talk about detachable base plates. Well, all magazines can have their base plate removed, so you can replace the springs, you can clean them. So does that mean every magazine, regardless of the capacity, because now they have detachable base plates? We don't know. There's an issue with the background check law where it's called continuous possession. So if I say, "Here, hold my gun for me," are you literally breaking the law because I no longer have continuous possession? Or the better example might be, if I bring my gun to a gunsmith to repair it and it has the magazine in it and I leave it with him, he's now technically violating the law because we haven't done a background check first. So it's very confusing. And the language that they put in here, we just don't know how to interpret it. And so the whole lawsuit, the one thing I do want to add, this is not a personal thing. This is, again, like I said, not a political thing. This is no different than two neighbors that have a dispute over a fence line. And one neighbor says, no, the property line is here, and the other says there, and they're not going to agree, and they're on opposite sides. So you go to a judge, and a judge decides for you. That's how our legal system works in this country. So rather than me making statements about, I'm not going to enforce this law, I'm not going to enforce that law, we're going to use our legal system and say, okay, we're at disagreement here. We're on different sides of our fence. Let's let a judge decide this. This is how it works. This lawsuit isn't monetary in any means. I mean, we're not trying to get rich off of it. This is strictly a situation where we believe that our legislators have gone too far with these bills to encroach on people's constitutional rights. The governor signed those, so he was the ultimate authority to put those laws into effect.
And, you know, I know you mentioned there are other plaintiffs in the lawsuit besides sheriffs, but sheriffs represent probably the largest group. What's the significance of, you know, a group of law enforcement officials putting forward this lawsuit?
Well, I think it's just so many of us, I guess, are alike thinking. I mean, clearly we have, you know, different responses to different things, and we're not always going to agree on all things. But I think as sheriffs in the state of Colorado, again, elected officials who represent the people that are electing them, I just think all of us kind of came together and said, this is not right. This is going beyond. This is more than what we're willing to accept, not as a sheriff, because quite frankly, law enforcement officers in the performance of duties exempt from some of these things. I can clearly carry more than a 30-round magazine in my AR-15 if I choose to. I can distribute those to my deputies as we do. So it's not an issue as far as being able to operate as a sheriff. It's an issue of, these are my personal rights as well. We represent our constituents. And when all of us get together and almost all agree that something isn't right, it's a pretty compelling argument to say something isn't right.
And a question, too, about, you know, education behind guns. I know that, you know, if you take hunter safety or a concealed weapons class, that sort of thing, there's a lot of education there. any feelings as to whether that should be just a requirement for any gun owner to have more education?
Well, again, I think it should be a preference to that. And let's go back to the automobile scenario. You don't have to go through driver's training as an adult to get your driver's license, but of course it would make sense to do that. But yet we could give you a license to drive, hand you the keys to a car, and we know that we kill 30,000 people annually in this country in car crashes. It would certainly make more sense on your behalf to do that, but that's your personal choice. And it shouldn't be the government to tell you, before I give you this, you know, you have to do this. And the difference here is, the ownership of guns, the right to keep and bear arms, is a constitutional right. There's no constitutional right to drive a car. So if the constitutional right is even more of a right than something where you have to be licensed and all that, then you have to look at that and say, do we want to require training? Do we want to impose training? Or do we just say it's the right idea? Let me give you a very simple example. We have a seatbelt law, which I support. But if you think through the seatbelt law, you're an adult. Do you not have the choice to say, I should wear my seatbelt or not? If you come to me and you say, Sheriff, how can I be safe? Of course I'm going to tell you, wear your seatbelt. That to me is a no-brainer. But do we have to pass a law that forces you to do that? Can you not make up your own mind as a free person in this country, as an adult in this country? Children, absolutely, because children don't have oftentimes the ability to make their own free choices, and they should be protected in car seats, et cetera. But just by way of a simple example, it's like, how many laws do we have to pass to regulate people's lives? Can we just simply say, let people use their own common sense, let them make choices in their life, let them decide how they want to live?
I mean, should there be, with that in mind, should there be any, in your opinion, governmental regulations on guns? I mean, should the government just get out, you know, step out of the picture?
Well, and again, you know, we talked about what the government already does regulate, and I'm completely comfortable with that, military armament and, you know, that sort of thing. But no, I mean, I have to tell you, I'm one of many Americans is frustrated that the government seems to want to get into every aspect of our lives. I mean, right down to, you know, the size of soda I can drink if I live in New York. And it's ridiculous. You know, again, I've told several people this, and I don't mean to sound arrogant or crass, but, you know, stay out of my wallet, stay out of my life, stay out of my family. And I really do have strong feelings about that. So with regard to gun laws, I'm perfectly comfortable with where they are now. I just don't see the need to push them any further. And I will tell you quite frankly, I feel very sorry, and my heart goes out to people that have suffered losses because of guns, but no more so than people have suffered losses from people that have, you know, been killed or injured in car crashes or any other things that go on in this world. You know, there's always risk in everything you do. But we have to look at this as it's not the emotional issue. It's not the anti-gun lobby taking advantage of some of these emotional issues. It's the Constitution. And if we're going to start having state laws or governors or even our president randomly chip away at our Constitution, then why not the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment? And that's really the bigger, broader picture for me. These two laws and the Second Amendment are sort of the catalyst for what's next or what if. You know, I referenced the Fourth Amendment earlier about search and seizure. Well, why don't we just do away with that and let me just start kicking doors in anytime I want and searching homes? Well, of course not, because you're protected under the Fourth Amendment. And so is gun ownership. It's protected under the Second Amendment. You're in the news business, and obviously and very appropriately have protections under the First Amendment. I'm sure you wouldn't appreciate that if the state legislature or the governor or somebody started cracking down, saying, well, that's only going to apply to print media. Those of you that are in radio or television, oh, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. You would be jumping up and down screaming, it's my First Amendment right. Well, we're jumping up and down screaming, say, as law-abiding citizens who own guns, it's our Second Amendment right.
Okay. And then, you know, I'm wondering if I know you said you're not refusing to enforce these gun laws. I don't exactly know how it's going to roll out on July 1st. You know, are the gun stores and rifle, for example, going to all of a sudden be required to do background checks? I mean, what is your role in this? I guess if there's a gun store in rifle that's not doing the universal background checks, does that mean that the sheriff's office gets involved?
We don't know. I mean, specifically if it's in rifle, of course, the police department. But just in more general terms, we don't know. We don't know what the law says. But part of the law with regard to the background checks is there's no requirement for anybody to do them. So the gun dealer down the road can say, I'm not going to waste my time for $10. I'm not going to do it. So then how do I, as a private citizen, sell that to you? How do I transfer that to you? One of the sheriffs said, I have a friend who's in the military, and his girlfriend lives with him. They're not married, but his girlfriend lives with him. He's getting ready to go be deployed. He leaves a handgun behind for her protection. They are now both violating the law. So nobody really knows. So there's no compelling requiring a gun dealer to do it. In other places, particularly in the more rural areas, there are no gun dealers around. So they would have to drive very, very far distances just to be able to transfer a gun from me to you, or sell it to me to you, or whatever the case. You know, there's some exceptions regard to family members and passing down guns and property and inheritance and things. But other than that, if I want to sell you a gun, we first have to seek out a licensed gun dealer that's willing to do it, go through the background check to make that happen. When in fact, you and I should be able to just sit here and make that transfer just as if I was selling you a steak knife set or anything else.
What do you think, how do you feel about the conversation that's going on in the country? I mean, it is an emotional one, and it's one that is has become very divisive. And it probably isn't going away anytime soon. How do you feel about sort of the atmosphere that's happening around this issue?
Yeah, I think this has been going on. I mean, as long as I've been alive, there's been debates about gun laws, and we've seen, cities pass very restrictive laws, yet their gun violence is still out of control. And so I think the debate has always gone on, and the debate will always continue to go on. But I think it gets back down to what was in those Bill of Rights when they were written so long ago by our forefathers. And those are our guiding principles in this country. When you look at the First Amendment, the only type of media was printed press. Now we have television, radio, social media, but yet you still are protected under that. And granted, when the Second Amendment was written, they had muskets and all that, but even though the technology's changed, we still enjoy those protections under that. So there is a national debate. There's always been a national debate. Right after the Reagan shooting, we had the Brady Bill, named in honor of James Brady, who was wounded in that. And it did nothing. There's nothing statistical to say it really helped anything. So it was sunsetted or repealed after 10 years. So there's always going to be that. There's always going to be this kind of ebb and flow of laws. And again, that's what the courts are there for. So I think right now in the country, I still believe, based on the number of millions of gun owners and the millions of guns that are out there, I still believe this country recognizes we do have a right to keep and bear arms. Where people are unsure or confused about is, well, I don't think this law being passed is infringing in that, but I think this one is. And that's where the gray line is, and that's where the courts sometimes will have to step up to decide that.
Okay. And then lastly, if these new gun laws in Colorado aren't, in your opinion, going to fix the problem of mass shootings, what will? What should be done? There's got to be a solution, right?
In the perfect world, I would like to say, yes, there's got to be a solution. But the solution is we're dealing with individual evil people. And again, let's go back to one of our most notable serial killers, Ted Bundy. He's alleged to have killed over 100 women, never used a gun. And so he was an evil person, and I don't know if we can stop that. There's a lot of complex things about opening up people's, mental health records to the public and being able to do that. But that argument goes into, HIPAA violations and medical privacy, and it's very, very complex. I don't know if we're ever going to stop it. I mean, we've for 20-something years now have been so proactive in domestic violence and making arrests and mandatory things, and we still see domestic violence. So we're not able to fix that. So I don't want to sound pessimistic and say we're never going to be able to fix the problem. But I just think it's not the tool. It's not the fact that a gun was used or a knife was used or some other means or a car was used. It's going after the people that are committing these and having harsh sentences and tough laws that affect them when they violate the law. I don't think nationally, locally, or even globally that strict, stringent gun laws are going to reduce this. I think if somebody has evil intention in their mind, they're going to find a way, if they choose to use a gun, to find a gun and do harm, or they're going to find another way to do harm. Even, statistically in other foreign countries where guns are controlled or completely regulated, some of the worst mass shootings in world history have occurred in those places. So again, you're not going to be out of that. The most recent example of what I'm talking about is we just saw on the news a couple weeks ago where a British soldier was run down in the UK and hacked to death by a guy with a machete. He had evil intentions. He was bound to do that, and he was able to kill somebody without the use of a firearm. How are we going to fix that? How are we going to fix him? Fix him by he goes to prison or for the rest of his life, or he gets a death penalty.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, domestic violence cases, and even though those haven't gone away entirely, I bet they've gone down probably in number. At least more people are talking about it. I mean, not, you know, beyond the mass shootings, there are these kind of everyday gun deaths that happen in our country. Do you think that such gun laws like the ones that were passed in Colorado could impact those deaths by guns that don't make the news necessarily, but they happen all the time?
Well, I guess you'd have to define, are they intentional or accidental? And if you would say a lot of these that we're talking about, for example, are either like suicides or accidents, my experience is somebody is determined to commit suicide, they're going to find a way to do it. And if not by gun, by another means. If they're accidents, again, it's unfortunate, but you have to compare the constitutional right with the risk that goes with that. Unfortunately, you know, children drown in swimming pools and people are killed in car crashes and you know, there's natural gas explosions and bad things happen. And again, there's risk in life. You know, you could slip in your bathtub and die.
So, what about gangs? For example.
Gangs, mm-hmm. Gang members, and in my piece it clearly says that if gang member number one wants to get a gun and go kill gangbanger number two, they're not going to get a background check to do it. They're going to buy one illegally, they're going to steal one, they're going to do that. So again, these laws that we're talking about are only going to affect the law-abiding citizens, and they are completely disregarding dealing with the criminals.
Okay. Anything else that you want to mention?
No, I think we're good. I think we covered most of the topics. You know, one of the things I am going to do, we talked about these op-eds, is when I spoke here in Glenwood on the recent Second Amendment meeting, one of the things I tried to compare this to for people that aren't gun owners or don't really understand or quite frankly aren't as involved one way or the other, you know, probably the majority of the citizens are kind of watching this to see what happens, is I correlate this to property, to neighbors, where one neighbor starts encroaching on the other neighbor by moving the fence line 2 feet at a time. And he keeps moving it and he keeps moving it, and the neighbor keeps relenting and keeps relenting until before you know it, the one neighbor's completely fenced the other neighbor from their home, taken their property. You know, they have no place to secure or provide for shelter for their family. And this is what I see with these gun laws. It's 15 rounds in a magazine today, and then next year it's going to be 12, and then in a couple of years it's going to be 8. And so sort of this slow 2 feet at a time thing. And I do believe that although there are certainly people that are very sincere and certainly believe that by controlling, regulating, restricting guns is going to solve our problems, there's also a anti-gun lobby out there that are intentionally and methodically and slowly trying to take guns away, and it goes right back to violating our Second Amendment.
But the anti-gun lobby, you could argue there's just as powerful a pro-gun lobby, if not more powerful.
Well, I agree, and that's why, like I said, it's sort of an ebb and flow over the years and decades of this, and it's going to continue for another 100 years, and it's going to change. But the bottom line is I have to go back to the very pure, this is our Constitution. This is how our country, this is our platform for our country. And if we want to change that as American citizens, there's a process. And the process isn't for a state legislature to pass laws or a governor to sign laws or a president to, you know, do executive edicts. The solution is you amend the Constitution, and there's a ratification process, and 2/3 of the states have to agree. And if you were to get to that point in this country with regard to the Second Amendment and gun issues, then clearly a majority of this country would rule and say no, 2/3 of, and based on ratifying and altering our Constitution, we don't want guns. At this point, I don't see that happening. But to me, that's the only way that you adjust and alter our Constitution. And right now, again, the right to keep and bear arms is in the Constitution. People, law-abiding citizens, have the right to keep and bear arms, and it can't just be whisked away by a state law or an individual politician. It has to be followed through in the process that we've established in this country and how we change our Constitution.
And you, I mean, you're obviously passionate about this. If you're writing op-eds, and you know, you kind of want to get your message out there, it sounds like. Why is this such an important issue for you?
Well, again, on the very surface, I'm a gun owner. I have been. I'm a hunter. My family has. I used to coach shooting sports in 4-H. I look at guns from a different point of view. Of course, there's danger that goes with them. No more dangerous than the liquor store that sells liquor to somebody who gets drunk and you know, kills somebody in a DUI crash. So there's always a danger that goes with a lot of things that are sold and procured and used out there. But I'm a strong believer in not only self-protection. I think I'll give you an example. In Garfield County, we have about one deputy per 1,000 residents that we service. If something's happening, somebody's breaking into your home, there's no guarantee we can be there in time, and you have a right to possess a gun to protect yourself, or you have a right to go out and target shoot, or you have a right to go hunting. So part of my passion with that is just I believe that guns are just another thing out there that people have a right to use and enjoy for whatever purposes they are. Just like, you know, maybe you enjoy boating or maybe you enjoy skiing or, you know, whatever it may be. The deeper issue is I get offended because I think these laws that are being passed are infringing on law-abiding citizens rather than focusing on the bad guys. And then finally, the broader picture, and these laws really are nothing more than the catalyst, is we're back to trying to alter our Constitution, and that's not how it's done. So it's three issues. It's personal gun owner involvement. It's the fact that I think we're overreaching and interfering in people's law-abiding citizens' private lives, and this isn't how we change our Constitution.
Well, thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.